Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. When I was a kid at school in Rhodesia, I remember once learning history, and we were learning about the early history of Rhodesia when whites came to Rhodesia. And the teacher was talking about whites asking blacks questions. And then the teacher made an interesting remark. The teacher said that the blacks would give the whites the answer that they know the whites wanted. Now, white people don't think in these terms. All whites, without exception, are pretty much used to straight talk. When they are asked a question, they give a straight answer. There are times when people are concerned about the feelings of other people, and maybe you sugarcoat the answer a bit. But as a rule, whites, especially as you get older, give more direct answers. And all whites, pretty much, most whites, understand that there is one truth, that the truth isn't flexible, that the truth is just straightforward and direct. And when they interact with other races, they think that everybody's like that. But in actual fact, that's not true. And there are a number of reasons why it's not true. One of the issues has to do with strength and power and fear. And the other is that in European civilization, a key value that we have is that we need to communicate the truth. And we have a commitment to the truth that is very firm. Most whites know that it is important to tell the truth, and it is inculcated in them, and it is part of their character. And Christians, for example, will be careful because God's going to punish them if they don't tell the truth. So, in white society as a whole, we take the truth very seriously. Over and above the fact that lots of things in society are geared to finding the truth. So, for example, science is based on a search for the truth. But so is the police. The police are there to find the truth. And so is the intelligence departments of the military. They are there to find the truth about military matters, enemies at work. The spies are there in order to find out the truth of what's going on in other countries. So wherever you go in society, there is a constant search for the truth. And the truth is then channeled towards the people who need to know it. They could be anybody from generals to business people who need to make business decisions to the government or departments of the government. So one is constantly hunting for the truth in the real world. And whites are very much attuned to that and taught about that. And we all understand that if you lie, that this is wrong. It's wrong to lie. And it's something that nobody else might know that you're lying, but now you've got this guilt complex that you were lying. You know it's wrong. It was wrong to lie. Sometimes people will come later and they'll even confess. But one of the things that whites don't grasp is that in the past, especially, not so much nowadays, but in the past, whites were much more confident. And they were confident about themselves as individuals, and they were confident about themselves as a group. And even when they traveled through places like Africa and North and South America, even when they went as small numbers, they still had a certain confidence about them. And then they met these other humans, and these other humans had different values. Now, in Africa, I can tell you that the truth is much more malleable. In Africa, people don't have that commitment to the truth that Europeans have. And so you've got two kinds of thinking, really. The one is logical thinking in our terms, the other one is emotional thinking. So when you're dealing with people on an emotional level, you might be talking logically, but they may be looking at it emotionally. So you ask them a question and you expect a yes or a no, and you expect it to correspond to reality. But they may be looking at it from an inferior point of view. They may be looking at it from an emotional point of view. And they may also be thinking that if they tell you the truth, what will your reaction be, and what will you do when you hear the truth? So this is where that kind of logic from Africa comes into practice, where they may quite well grasp what it is that you are going to do depending on what they tell you, and they may decide to tell you something that will work better for them. So they may, for example, like my teacher said, they may decide to tell you what they are expecting that you want to hear. A simple example, I think the teacher was talking about something like distance, if I recall, where the whites say to the blacks, how far is it to get to that place? And the blacks know that it's very, very, very far away. And the blacks might actually say, no, it's just beyond that other hill. You see that hill over there? It's just behind that hill. And the whites will be happy, and then they'll carry on. Meanwhile, it's beyond 20 other hills, actually. So they may be answering in that particular case, not even with malice, but just to make you happy. Whereas for you, you really just want to know the truth. You want to know, is it one hill, is it 5 hills, or 25 hills? And you will accept whatever they tell you, but they may choose to answer from some kind of emotional angle. Now, the other thing is, of course, fear. Again, it's something that whites don't think about. Whites, as a rule, are not a fear-based people. Even when all kinds of things are wrong for whites, whites do not live in constant fear. Whites don't know what it's like to feel fear, but others may know that quite well. So whites think that all discussions with Jews and other races are direct discussions over the truth, and that it's a straightforward debate, but in reality it's not. Whites who are experienced in dealing with other cultures and who maybe explore or who are involved in military work, they would know that this is not always the case, that you can't just ask people and always get a straight answer. So they know that it's a more convoluted thing in order to arrive at the truth. Now, in our history with the Jews in Europe, the Jews have lived among us for so long, and we've had times of good relations with Jews and then bad relations with Jews. And this has come and gone in cycles, and it's come and gone in almost every different corner of Europe. And of course, whites have tossed Jews out hundreds, if not thousands, of times. Whites have evicted Jews, kicked them out. So we've got a historical dynamic with the Jews. And that dynamic has repeated itself over and over and over again. In fact, I'd say that dynamic has repeated itself literally to death, and it should be more than obvious by now that whites and Jews are incompatible and that these two groups have got a permanent problem, and this problem cannot be resolved. It's a case of a parting of ways. There is a kind of a love-hate relationship that's going on here. But there are clearly payoffs, otherwise this thing would have ended a long time ago. And the fact that Jews keep coming back to whites and keep moving back into white society, that should show you that there's a payoff, and that even when things have gone wrong and they've been kicked out, that they themselves want to return again. I think Hitler himself has even spoken about that Jews will be back. And here we are in the 2020s, and Jews have been moving into Berlin in the last decade or so. Jews are back in Germany. Jews are going back to all the different places where they've been thrown out. So that should show you that they have a need to be among us. But in this video, I'm not going to discuss why they come back, nor am I going to discuss this dynamic. What I really just want to focus on in this video is, what do Jews say to each other? Now, in these times when Jews have come and gone, and when relations between whites and Jews improved and got worse, there are many times when whites went to Jews and asked Jews questions. Or whites would discover something about Jewish scriptures, and they'd discover something racist or nasty that Jews have written in their Talmud and in their books. And then whites go and say to the Jews, "Is this true?" I did a whole video about Napoleon's time with the Jews, when he decided he was going to solve the Jewish problem across Europe, and he called all the Sanhedrin from all across Europe together, and he had discussions with them, and he asked them questions, and eventually Napoleon clearly realized that, just like I've mentioned in Africa, etc., that you ask questions and you're not getting a straight, honest answer. And whites have been through this process many times, and then when the Jews are cornered, then the Jews also know the game from past experience, from history, from their history, and they know that if they have to answer certain questions in certain ways, whites outnumber them, whites are physically able to kill them and harm them and throw them in jail. You know, so imagine whites go to Jews and say, "Do you do child sacrifice?" Whites don't realize that there are too many things that we would ask that they would never want to give you the real answer. That if what we are onto is true, there's no ways they can admit to it. So these people live among us, and they live among us as a state within a state, because they know the benefits, but they also know that this relationship, for it to work for them, it's got to be disingenuous. That if they are totally honest about everything, that we would be angry quickly. So Jews clearly have to be hidden. And they know that they are living in a place that they want to live because of the benefits of living there, but that in order for them to gain benefits, they have to live among a potential enemy, an enemy that can turn around and burn them any time that enemy gets angry. And they're going to be outnumbered. So one of the things that I also need to get back to is Jews and assimilation. Because whites always tell people they must assimilate. But Jews actually know up front that they're not going to assimilate. However, they're not going to tell you that up front because you're not going to let them into the country to begin with. So they will lie in order to get in. And they'll say, yes, 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 we'll assimilate. Meanwhile, they have no intention of assimilating. They know that to assimilate is also death for them because it's going to blow up their whole game. So these people move in amongst us, but they move in amongst us as a state within a state. And they know they've got to be careful of the non-Jews. So they're going to move in and they're going to function together, and there are things that they can tell each other, but they can't tell those things to us, because to tell us, oh well, you see, we're beating you at this and we're outwitting you at that and we're busy doing this thing that you don't like and that thing you don't like, but it's making us a lot of money or we're getting a lot of power, all these things will piss us off. So there have been many times in every country, whether it's Britain when they kicked the Jews out in the 1200s or 1300s, France, all these different places, on many, many, many occasions, whites have asked Jews, you know, do you do this? Do you do that? Is this true? Is that true? And then the Jews have to deny it. And there are many times when those Jews have also fooled whites, where their denials, etc., paid off, and they were able to lie to whites successfully. So, another way of approaching the matter is to find out, what do Jews tell each other? What do they say when they are truly together and when they are relaxed? So, in this little video, we're going to take a look at a couple of examples that show you how Jews behave when they're among other Jews and when they feel safe and when they can really converse with each other on a proper level. So, for example, whites have wanted to know, do you see Jews as being different to the Goyim? Are you superior to the Goyim? Do you look down on the Goyim? Etc., etc. Do you treat the Goyim differently, the Goyim being the non-Jews? And you know, another thing about the Jews that has struck me as very interesting when I look at the way they carry on is that the Jews are constantly inventing new terminology and new words and new concepts. I was reading some Jewish stuff recently and I saw that Jews have got terms that even other Jews don't understand. And I'm wondering, you know, why do they need to invent all these different things? They seem to complicate things to a tremendous degree. But I've mentioned in another video about Jewish complexity that I think complexity is part of the process of lying. That complexity is a very important thing for them because it helps them to hide things. And I think in general, they need to function in a way that they literally speak another language and that they can use code words and terms that non-Jews would not understand easily. You know, a simple example that I noticed when I spoke to Jews was the synagogue. We know that a synagogue is a Jewish church, for want of another term. But when they talk amongst each other, they don't use that term synagogue. Oh, I'm going to the synagogue. No, they say things like, I'm going to shul. They say things which, unless you are familiar with them, you would hear them say it and it wouldn't have any meaning to you. So think of them as a people who have to live among us for gains. Make no mistake, they're not here to live among us for love and friendship. They are here to live among us for the benefits that come from our society. I will get back to that later. We'll discuss that as a separate issue. But in order for them to live here, they know that they can't fully be themselves. And so they must function with a certain amount of secrecy and care. Anyway, here are three little videos that I want to show you that will give you some indication that the denials of Jews mean nothing, and that when they are among each other, they definitely, definitely say things among each other that they would not say in front of us. So the first one that you're going to see is a very short piece, and it's a Jewish rabbi. And he's actually even reading out of their scriptures. And the Jewish rabbi is advising the other Jews about the need to hide their wealth, that they mustn't show off their wealth too much, that they must rather keep it more low-key. And he'll explain why.
You know what you got to do? You got to keep a low profile. If you got a fancy car, don't show off with it in front of the goyim. You want to build a beautiful house? Don't make it so fancy outside so the goyish neighbors are going to say, wow, look at those wealthy Jews. Keep it inside. Keep a low profile. And you know what he says? He says it's unbelievable.
So what do Jews teach their children? I've raised the issue before about strange things that Jews might do that they would never want to tell other people. I've mentioned, for example, that story that I heard from a black woman that I worked with, where she asked me one day whether Jewish fathers take the virginity of their daughters. And I asked her, you know, why does she ask that question? And then she said that among the blacks, there is talk about that. And I mentioned that Jews have got servants like other whites, perhaps even more than other whites. So you never know what they might pick up about people's personal habits. In that regard, there was another South African supporter of mine from my original African crisis who was actually of Italian descent, and he later left South Africa and he lived and worked in different parts of Europe. And one thing he told me as well about Jews that he'd picked up was that when Jewish children reach puberty or their teenage years or whatever, that their parents organize sex parties. So the boys and girls are brought together for the purpose of sex. Their parents teach them about sex or have some kind of arrangement where they get together to experience sex. And his view was that it's not just Jews, but other races also do things like this. So there are things that whites think everybody is like us, but in actual fact, other races and other cultures may do things that most whites are not aware of. So what is it that Jews teach their children? What do they tell their kids? How do they explain life to their children? Ultimately, in human society, the place where there is the most direct honesty is from parents to children, because of the bonding and the relationships and the fact that the parents are there to try to help the children make a success of life. So the parents pass on their knowledge to their children because they want their children to succeed. And of course, in many cases, children also later have to look after the parents. So the parents have a vested interest over and above love, but they have got many reasons why they would want their children to do better and to get the best chance in life. So what do Jews teach their children about life? What do they tell them? One of the things that whites have raised in the past is whether Jews are racist, whether they teach their children and whether the rabbis teach other Jews to be racist. At the moment in the world, the only people who get beaten up on racism left, right and center are whites. I will tell you that in my own views, as I've observed other races here in South Africa, as I've observed the different races that are here and the way they think and the way they behave, that even when they don't openly tell you they are racist, if you watch their behavior carefully, they are racist. They are racist. I'd go so far as to say that everybody is racist, but the difference is that whites used to say things openly in what they believed were their own societies. The others are racist too, but they just never admit it. So you'll see all kinds of quotes from Jews and from various Jewish leaders, rabbis, their scriptures. They talk about the fact that the Goyim are here to serve them, etc. And when Jews have been asked about these things, they've all denied it and that kind of thing. Anyway, here is a particularly interesting little bit of video that I want to show you. You will recall in another video, I had mentioned that many a true word is said in jest. That sometimes when people are joking, they will joke about or admit to something that's true. And I gave that example of that Jew who turned around and said that Jews know what they are really good at, and what they're really good at is bullshit, which I'd agree with. I think that is an admission that was made in humor that's actually true. Now, another place where you sometimes get the truth slipping out as well is from children. Children, the younger they are, children are the ones who are most likely to let the truth slip out. How many times do you know of instances in a family where some child at the dinner table or wherever comes out and says something that is highly embarrassing in said company? The child comes and just bursts out with something and says something that it shouldn't have said, that the parents would really, really not want their child to say. Well, on the Jerry Springer show in America, a very interesting thing happened. A little Jewish girl popped up in a discussion. And unfortunately, the clip that I have is only 16 seconds long. I sure wish that the entire thing could have been played. I would have liked to know what was said before, but most especially what was said after. So this little Jewish girl pops up and she says, "I'm a Jew, and in our Bible it says that you people are like animals. And how many rabbis have said, and the Talmud says, that goyim, non-Jews, are animals? But of course, Jews deny these things. But here, this little girl says it. So that shows that somewhere along the line, either in reading the scriptures or in going to the synagogue or listening to the rabbi, she picked this up and she firmly believes this. And so she says to them, you know, our scriptures teach that you people are like animals. And then what happens is one of the other young white girls immediately fires back and says, which Bible are you reading? And the Jewish girl then is quite arrogant and she says that she's reading from their Bible, and she kind of mocks our Bible and she says, well, you know, you people may have wanted to sort of copy us. You know, your Bible is not as old as our one. You know, that kind of thing. Though the reality is completely different, but I'm not here to debate the Bible issue. But the point is just look at the way this little girl talks, and clearly that is what has been conveyed to her, that we are animals. I have my own comments about animals, but watch the clip first.
Excuse me, I'm a Jew, and I just like to say that, you know, in our Bible it says that you're like animals.
What Bible are you reading from?
Well, the Bible that was made a long, long time ago. And your Bible was just made because you wanted to. You wanted to make a Bible.
The Jews,
Unlike religious people, I don't really concern myself about this business of are we animals, aren't we animals. I quite happily accept that all humans are animals and that we behave like animals. And it's a topic that I will deal with later. I don't see it as a problem. I see it simply as a fact of life. And the difference is that I view all humans as animals, and the biological data shows that animals and humans have got lots of things in common, and you can see all the different things. It's just that we're higher forms of animals. And then the question becomes about the different nature of the human animals. Let's call it the human species of animals. So I don't need to run away from the notion of animals. If the Jews call us animals, I don't have an issue with that, because they're also animals. And we all behave in an animal way. And there are strengths to being in the animal world. It's not at all something to even concern yourself about or worry about. We are a very successful species of animal. So for me, these terms have no meaning. But anyway, this might have been some kind of moral debate. So in a moral debate, then people are trying to be perfect and people don't want to pretend that they do things wrong or differently or are driven by emotions and animal lusts. When I look at the world, I see the world the way the world really is. And that's all I care about. And that's quite fine. There's nothing to run away from. In this case, there were girls, and maybe it had to do with some kind of relationship behavior or sexual behavior. And you know what? We're animals, and we have animal instincts and animal urges. And those things normally have got a drive for life. The animal urges and the animal instincts are instincts to live. And it's weird and it does some funny things, but it's an instinct to life. That is what I would say. So don't even worry about those things. Those things are absolutely minor. I don't concern myself with perfection. You don't need to be perfect in order to be excellent. And we will discuss these things elsewhere. Among Christians, Christians have got a real hang-up about perfection. And I had it in my own family, where people think that if you aren't absolutely perfect and you do one little thing wrong, your life was a waste. You should kill yourself. No, no, no. All that is junk thinking. That's junk thinking. That's stupid thinking. And that kind of thinking has many, many problems with it. We need to live. We need to survive. And we need to thrive. Now, the next clip is a clip that's more recent, and in this clip you have one of those girls who was involved with the Jewish billionaire pedophile Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. And this white girl was among all these wealthy Jews, and so she starts talking about some of the things that the wealthy Jews said among each other. Now, like I've said earlier, I'm quite certain that everybody is racist. But the difference is only whites get beat up about it. And in the same vein, when people get a chance to become powerful and they become strong and they feel strength, then they change. And it's something I've noticed with the blacks in South Africa, the non-whites in general. The moment that they get a chance to get money and to get wealth and to get power and to get positions, you start seeing how they behave. Now, the hypocrisy of the situation is actually quite astounding. So you have, for example, these blacks. And the blacks say that the whites kept them down, that the whites didn't pay them enough money, whites didn't give them opportunities, whites didn't treat them well, etc. So because the whites were on top, they then can turn around and blame the whites for everything. And then they talk about how their people are struggling and that the whites should still help. And as time goes by, if you watch it more closely, you'll see the pure hypocrisy of the whole situation. You'll see that what do they do when they become rich? How many of them will go and take all their money and give it to charity for their own race? And you'll find that they don't. You'll see that they can become millionaires, multimillionaires, billionaires, and they'll be making money, and while they are rolling in the money, they'll still turn around and say to the whites, hey, you need to give more money to our people. Meanwhile, they've got money. They've got billions in their own bank accounts, and they can give it to their own people in the next 5 minutes if they want, but they don't. And if you look more closely at their lives, you'll see what they start doing, and they start behaving just like we used to, and they're even worse. They start buying fancy cars, they start buying expensive clothing, they start having parties. They want to drink expensive wines. They start having love affairs. They start having fallouts with each other. Then they're in love. Then they're out of love. Then this one blames that one. Then that one went and slept with that one. And you watch their lives and how they live their lives. And you would have thought, since they had so much that they found wrong with the whites, you would have thought that when they get to the top, that they're going to be kinder and gentler, and they are going to be much more moral than we were. And in actual fact, if you had to compare their morality with our morality, I think we'd still come out on top. and you just check them partying, wasting money, and doing all kinds of things that few whites even have managed to do. I certainly look at the lives of many of these blacks and non-whites who've moved up in life, and they are doing things that I certainly never had a chance to do in my entire life. I was never that well off, but I also wasn't that way inclined. And I look at what they do, and I say to myself, you aren't any example of being anything better than we were, and I can show you many ways in which we were better than you. So anyway, you would expect, after all this complaining and whining and moaning, that they would apparently be better than us if they were in our positions. And in actual fact, you'll find that when they grow stronger and more confident, and they can be the boss, and they can be the unchallenged bosses, what are they like? What are they like? Well, listen to this white girl who was probably one of those underage white girls who was in there with Epstein, sleeping with his buddies. Listen to her story of how they were treated, the things that were said to her. And tell me if this isn't Jewish supremacism, if this isn't Jewish racism.
But I lost 20 pounds because I wasn't allowed to go get food. And when I called Gilan and asked why I couldn't eat there, she said, it's a Jewish country club. You're not Jewish. They're not going to serve you. This is how this woman spoke to me. Yeah, this is how these people think. I swear to you. It was a theme all the time with them. With Eileen Guggenheim, with, Jeffrey Epstein, with Gilan. It was a theme. You know, Jeffrey was a lot less horrible than Gilan as far as a human being, like just being around, because she was raping just as many children.
So the country club, you weren't allowed to go, yeah, because it was known. Only for, people of a certain religion.
Jewish
and
people.
Ethnicity. Okay, so yeah.
Religious.
That's unfortunate. Wow.
I mean, they could cut you down, and it was so morally devastating. Like, you know, like just, you just felt useless as a human being when you were told, you're nothing because you're not Jewish, you're stupid, you're useless, a useless white girl, a poor little peasant. You know, I mean, just the things that I was called, I was just like, I believed it, you know, because it was like a cult. Anybody who was not Jewish, and you're right about this, but the way they spoke about them, it was really horrifying. And it showed me a great deal about how these people truly believe that they're chosen to do something here. I don't know. It's unbelievable to me. I mean, and it was every one of them, the way they spoke. And one time I heard Isabel say to her mother, Eileen, Mommy, why do you call Maria a nobody? And she said, Honey, Isabel, Maria is not a Jew. She is a nobody.
Wow. Well, you know, it is worth
pointing. So you can see why,
I mean,
for about 20
years.
Well,
that type of stuff I might actually include just because the Maxwell family have
you
tied
should include
to this
it.
Group
you should include it.
What's it called? Chabad Lubavitch. And group openly talks about how only Jews are human and the rest of human beings are like cattle, basically.
So there you have it. They show that when they are together, Jews are superior, Jews are the boss, whites are nothing. And I can tell you that here in Africa, I've seen what the whites have experienced under black rule, not just in South Africa, in Zimbabwe, in the Portuguese colonies. I can tell you that when the shoe is on the other foot, you will find that all the things that they accused us of, that they do, not only those same things, but they're even worse than we were. One thing, for example, our leaders, all the white leaders, were totally frugal by comparison to these blacks. These people, when they get the chance, they are busy stuffing money in their pockets left, right and center. They are living a life like you cannot believe. They get up to all kinds of nonsense that the whites didn't get up to. And that's the thing about liberalism. Liberalism and diversity. You whites in North America and in Europe, you people have been fed a very narrow line of thinking. And it is very, very tailor-made to your situation. So, for example, the Americans get beat up over slavery endlessly. So slavery is the thing that they can beat you with constantly. In Rhodesia, the crime apparently was colonialism. In South Africa, the crime apparently was apartheid. For the Germans, the crime is Nazism. For the Americans, the crime is slavery. For the British, the crime will be colonialism as well. In the case in the case of the Canadians, it will be the Indian kids that you killed and buried, which nobody has found evidence of. And for the Australians, it's going to be the Aborigines. For the New Zealanders, it's going to be the Maoris. So there's a stick with which to beat each group of whites. There's a different stick with which to beat you. But if you were to challenge their narrative, if you were to challenge their narrative more closely, and you were to really give their narrative a bit of a challenge and a push, you will actually see that that narrative breaks down under closer investigation and also under other conditions. If the conditions change, you'll see how the entire narrative totally and utterly just falls apart. What are they like? What are they like when they get a chance? How do they behave? And then you'll see that all that whining and moaning and groaning and crying about all the crimes of the whites, that when they get a chance and you see what they get up to, then you will look back on it and you'll see, oh my goodness, could it be that they are worse, worse than we were? In the case of the blacks in Africa, the blacks will complain that the whites killed them, that the whites, let's say the whites killed them. Then give them a time, give them a chance to rule, give them a chance to do some things, and then later on you'll see how many of their own people they kill. And all the things that the whites were accused of, when you compare the accusations against the whites with the reality of what they get up to, you'll see that the whites will come out clean. I will tell you that in the fullness of time, in the fullness of time, all whites will be vindicated everywhere. When you leave the others to do their thing, all whites will look back and say, hold on, you are out of control. You did things that we never did. But there is a good side to some of this in the sense that it's not been all bad letting Jews and others have power. It's not been all bad because you get to see the crimes, the nonsense, and the lies that they get up to. And what they get up to is worse than what we were. I'm quite convinced that in the fullness of time, in 50 years' time, 100 years' time, when people look back and they look back at what happened, they will just shake their heads and they'll say, you know what? It was much better when the whites ran it. But these others who've risen to power, they will under no conditions want to give up their power. They will not want to give up power. Yet whites handed over all kinds of power to them, all on the basis of just a bunch of liberal propaganda. and the whites will see that they were tricked. But don't concern yourself about that. At the end of the day, all that matters is real ability. Real ability still comes through at the end of the day. And a lot of what you're looking at is a Jewish house of cards. That house of cards can come tumbling down. And the Jews know it. But anyway, here were some examples of what are they like when they're among each other, when they call the shots. What do they tell each other? What do the rabbis tell the other Jews? What do the children get taught? What are the Jews like when they get to have their own Jewish clubs? And what do you see? You'll see that they are nothing at all what they claim they are. So be aware that all discussions, let's call it all interracial discussions, are by their very nature to a tremendous degree disingenuous. That in actual fact, you cannot really have an honest racial discussion between people because the facts might actually result in the whites winning and the others are just too mean-spirited, too insecure, or too power-hungry to let the truth have its way. So how they behave among themselves and the things they do, they may have to lie about it in order to protect their own position. So, how far away is that location? Oh no, boss. It's just over the other hill. It's just behind that hill. It's not far away. A lot of interracial discussions may be of that nature. I'm not saying all discussions are like that, but it could be a hell of a lot more than you realize. A hell of a lot more. It could even be that 90% of all racial discussions are bogus, that people just present whatever side they need to present for whatever benefit they want. And you might need to be more skeptical about what these different groups claim. And Jews should be seen as another race. With Jews, it's more than just a religion. It's more than just a religion or a belief. By the Jewish definition itself, Jews themselves treat all Jews the same, regardless of whether they're atheists or whether they are religious. So just be aware, all this liberal stuff you're listening to, it's just propaganda. Go and do some more digging and be aware that others may need to lie in order to protect their position. They feel threatened by the truth about themselves. They need to lie about themselves. It's critical for them. Otherwise, they will lose. And that is something that I'm sure most whites have never considered.
So for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, you know you don't.